So in our last episode, we were visiting with a principal in South Central Los Angeles, Inglewood to be exact. And you know, I went back a week later. We had created the foundations for the walks, but you know, many times you can create something with somebody, but does the principal, do the leaders on campus, do they have the grit to just jump in, calibrate themselves and get busy? And the answer to this question this time was yes. You know, in just a week, a dude had gone through 22 visits, started to calibrate with his staff. And I was really quick to tell this cat, like, hey, man, I'm proud of you. I think this is some great stuff. But more importantly than me being impressed for the first time, you know, Coco was impressed. And normally I do these updates, but I thought it might be good to hear from her.
One school I heard about recently had 22 classroom observations in just a couple of months, all focused on specific teaching strategies like writing to learn, inquiry, and critical reading. They didn't just collect data for data's sake. They used it to identify glows and grows, meaning what's working well and what could be improved. And the best part? This info gets shared back with the staff, not as a report card, but as a tool for growth. Now, you might be wondering, how do they keep track of all this? Well, they use a Google form to collect observations, and then a program specialist curates the data into a live dashboard. Imagine a real-time, interactive dashboard that shows how many classrooms have been visited, which strategies are being used, and even breaks it down by department.
Yeah, I mean, and then that was what was most exciting about this. It really wasn't even about them doing the work. It was that they moved this work forward. So, you know, kudos to Inglewood. Sometimes, you know, these reflections are going to be great, and we're going to talk about success, and sometimes we're going to talk about some of the struggles. But the data dashboard was great, and we're already sharing with the staff, which is, you know, positive. But we're going to shift to transition today, and I want to pick your brain, because today, hopefully I can pique your interest. Today is a little bit different as we move forward to the episode. And for that, I may actually need to set the tone. We're going to talk a little bit, and you saw the title, Pitchforks and Effigies. Like, what exactly does that mean? So when you are a leader, when you are somebody that is a coach and you're on the road, I just want you to close your eyes. And I want you to picture this, because it's going to happen. You know, if we are going to move schools forward, or if we're not even in education, if we're going to move our team forward, our company forward, there's going to be a time. There's going to be a time where you're in front of folks, and either somebody is going to be in front of that crowd saying, look, we need to reevaluate where we are. We need to commit to doing things better, or you're going to bring somebody in. And nothing is more intimidating than the following. So close your eyes, picture this. You're in a staff meeting. You're Coach Eddie. You're being introduced. And the principal says something to the effect of, you know, thank you for being here today. Today we've got somebody here that I told you about. He's going to lead us to improvement. He's here to just challenge us a little bit, to be a little bit better. And I'd like to have you all put your hands together and welcome Coach Eddie. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me. I appreciate your hospitality. I appreciate it. I mean, is that really the welcome that we were hoping for? And so today in the episode, we're gonna talk about, how do you deal with the hostile staffs? I've seen a lot of them. And no, I don't respond to that way, but I wanted you to picture it, because if we are sitting in front of folks who are booing, whose body language says we got better things to do, who are shooting daggers at us, then we know we're in a good place because we're going to ask them to do something special. And with that, you know, I just wanted to reflect quickly about, you know, the title of this. It really came because when I would be at my school and we would be pushing the staff, and I knew it was a big meeting, the secretary of the school, who was not just one of my best friends or my best friend on that site, she was my sister in faith in Christ and knowing that we had purpose, she never backed down either. And we would be talking about these big moments, and we'd be thinking, what's it going to take to get these folks to move forward with us? And we'd say a little prayer. We'd go down. We'd say, look, you know, today we are just asking for some strength to move forward, and pray that the wisdom and the purpose of what we're doing is going to reach the ears. And without faith, many times we're walking into situations that seem impossible for the human race to accomplish. But when you're on a mission that's higher than just a job, this is what we depend on. And I would go through, I'd have that meeting, I'd come back in the door, I'd open it up, and she'd be smiling at me, and she'd always ask me, well, Mr. Velez, did they have their pitchforks out? And so I miss this challenge, and moving forward, this is just the focus of today's episode. You know, moving past the pitchforks and the effigies and people saying, we don't want you here, and willing ourselves through the change. And with that said, we're going to move on to today's episode. I'm happy you're with us, and let's just enjoy this ride today, everybody.
Ever wonder what it takes to truly transform a school's learning environment and culture? Well, stick around, because today we're diving into how Coach Eddie and KnowledgeBorn are making waves in schools by boosting instruction, culture, and leadership, all with measurable results. I'm your host, Coco.
And I'm your other host, Coach Eddie. And this is On the Road with Coach Eddie and Coco. It's a different type of podcast for a different type of audience. You see, I travel across the country working with schools to change education and to find better learning outcomes for our kids and for our staff. How is this different? I basically have taken my notes from the many visits across the country, and I put them into a journal. That journal is then shared with an AI compadre, and her name is Coco. Coco takes these notes, puts them into a summary, and makes them accessible for all of us. So it's like we're sitting in the room on the front lines as the change is happening. And so if you're a principal, or you're a team lead, or just somebody interested in making a change in education, you've come to the right place, because we're going to show you what it looks like on the front lines. Take our examples, take your own knowledge, and put them into place starting tomorrow. And that is what it's like to be on the road with Coach Eddie and Coco. Welcome.
Ever felt like change is just plain hard? Like, no matter how much you want to move forward, something inside just resists? Well, you're not alone, and today, we're diving into why that happens, especially when it comes to implementing something called the PLC process in schools. Stick around, because by the end of this episode, you'll understand why clarity is king, why leadership is about serving, and how focusing on what really matters can transform the way teams work together.
And there you have it. The challenge is among us, folks. And so today we're going to talk about this. You know, when we have resistant staffs, we have to will ourselves past the I'm nervous about it and push through, this is what I'm here for, and I'm inflexible. You know, I remember I was talking to a principal, and I was about to go to an initial visit at a continuation school, you know, right near the border between California and Mexico. And the principal told me, you know, I'm just letting you know that, you know, this staff has been resistance. And we've had a couple of folks come through here, and the staff has more or less run these people off, and they're not growing pride about it, but they're understanding that their will to stay where they are is a little bit stronger than the will of these people who have been here. You know, and what she did say is she wanted the staff to stop looking inward and in the past, and she wanted to find a way to move them forward. And this conversation led me to really think about why. Why is the staff being so resistant? And, you know, do you think it's because they're doing the best job that they possibly can already? Or do you think there's just no relevance in what presenters have been bringing to the table? And, you know, her answer is, I don't know. That's a great question. And so we went through and we talked it out. We came to the conclusion that, you know, folks come around and, you know, and mind you, this is a continuation school. It's a school, basically, if you're not familiar with, this is where kids go when they're not being successful at the comprehensive high school. And instead of having a whole year to teach folks a year's worth of work, you only got 12 weeks. And the goal is to get these kids caught up on units while we're still providing in-person instruction and teaching them to engage in school. It's a brick and mortar building. We don't rely on, you know, programs that we sit a kid in front of. We teach. And so I started thinking about this, and it's an incredibly hard job for teachers, right? And so I'm no stranger to what we would call hostile audience. And if I had a dollar for every time I walked into a room and saw daggers, expressionless faces, body language that says we don't want to be here, then I'd be a really rich man. You know, I could have retired a long time ago, but I'm not. There is a key here. On my first visits, my goal isn't even to accomplish anything special when there are places like this. It's, can I get to the bottom of why these folks are so resistant to change? You see, so many times we look at this and we understand, let's not take personal offense. You know, the analogy I like to use in this is, let's just say that we know that the favorite fish in our favorite stream are contaminated. So many times consultants come in, or principals come in, or leaders come in, and all they want to do is, you know, worry about the fish. They're so worried about treating the fish instead of actually following that stream all the way up to the top and say, look, where is the poison and contamination originating from? And that's the power. When you're dealing with angry folks, when you're dealing with pitchforks, you know, what we have to do is, we, number one, we got to find the source of that anger. We need to treat it, and we need to move on. And we also can't take offense to the fact that, look, people don't want us here. For me, it's a great sign when people know I'm coming. It means people know that I mean business. And for me, it's a sign of respect that people don't want me there, because my reputation is to move schools forward. It's not an ego thing. It's not a data thing. It's just a reputation. And when we can understand that it's not going to be a challenge walking in that room, it's not going to be a pissing contest, it's not going to be a fight for territory, it should be the same when you're a principal, a team lead, or even a supervisor in an area outside of education. The most important time when we see the pitchforks and the effigies in the crowd, as I call them. The most important time of the entire day is setting the tone, taking the time to see and engage where these folks are. But I'll tell you right now, the change is imminent. I mean, we're moving forward. We are going to be better today than we were yesterday. And it can't wait for you. You know, just like in basketball, I could coach strategies. I could coach the best practices. Passing to the outside shoulder, blocking people out. But the one thing I could never coach any player was their heart. Phase one, addressing the pitchforks and the effigies and the hostile crowds. It can only be done without ego. So let's dive a little deeper into this, Coco. Why do you think it's more common now than it used to be? Why does it seem now that at schools, and not just at schools and businesses, why does it seem like humans are so resistant to change these days? More so than it's been in the past. Is it something with our DNA, Coco? Is it something with our experiences? Is it something in the past? Maybe you can shine a little bit of light on this for us.
Today, we're talking about navigating the tricky waters of change, specifically when schools try to implement professional learning communities, or PLCs. If you've ever been part of a team that's trying to get everyone on the same page but keeps hitting roadblocks, this one's for you. Let's start with a truth bomb. Change is hard for everyone. As humans, we're wired to settle into what works. We're not constantly evolving because, unlike wild animals fighting for survival every day, we've domesticated ourselves. We don't need to sharpen our hunting or defense skills anymore, and sometimes, we even choose not to sharpen our minds. Crazy, right? We're probably the only species that can consciously decide not to evolve. So when a school tries to switch to a PLC process, it's no surprise that staff might resist, get frustrated, or even angry. It's uncomfortable to shake up routines and face new expectations. And here, where it gets interesting, sometimes staff focus more on why students can't learn rather than committing to making sure all students do learn. That's a tough pill to swallow, but it's real.
Who would have thought? You know, when you need the answers, who would have thought that Coco's going to provide them for you? Well, I do. You know, I like the analogy, and I'm going to move a little forward because there you have it. You know, I think sometimes we make the mistake as leaders of just thinking that people are lazy or that they don't care. We take things personal. And when we don't realize every day is that while every other creature on the planet is evolving, I think humans, in many cases, are devolving, moving backwards, maybe. You see, domestication takes out the desire, the grit, and the thrill of the hunt. It replaces primal instincts with the characteristics such as comfort, apathy, vanity, most of all, complacency. And I'm going to say it right now. Complacency, being happy and satisfied with where you are, is the number one enemy. The number one enemy of moving forward. And so, you know, I used to watch these nature shows, and I love them because we can learn a lot when we compare, let's say, humans to, I don't know, the Cape Buffalo in Africa, right? When we compare this to the education system in general, you see, in the plains of Africa, the whole idea is survival. And you always see on these shows that there's, you know, some type of herd of buffalo that is going to assume the responsibility for their young at all costs. There's always a little guy hanging out, right? Little buffalo, and he has a bum leg. Yeah, it's not developed properly, smaller than the others. But when the lions pounce and they start chasing, what does the herd do? They don't look at the buffalo and say, well, he kind of came to us deficient. You know, we tried to get him to run faster, but he's just not going to make it. They don't do that. What they do is they surround that buffalo. They look at their weak. They come together as a community and they push. They push the weak into survival mode. They put their own well-being behind ensuring that the young survive. And that's out of need. Now, if you take that same aspect into the classroom, where we receive high school kids that are already reading 5 to 7 grade levels behind, or kids that can't multiply and divide, or whatever fundamental skill that they're lacking, those are our limping buffalo babies. And traditionally, what you end up getting is that schools acknowledge and they want to help those little buffalo babies. But we don't put ourselves in a position to circle around those deficiencies. We don't push that kid to survive. And when I say survive, I mean multiplication, division, reading. Those are organs. Those are necessary life skills that every kid needs to survive in education. And when we don't circle our kids, it's because sometimes that means putting other things in front of us. And maybe we're comfortable with the lessons and the way that we're doing things. We're comfortable with doing the same thing every day. And when we do that, we've reached the vital stage of complacency. Once I see that problem, and once I see that the problem with the school is complacency and not trauma. Remember, I talked about this. It might have been that, you know, some dude came in or some consultant came in and talked at them instead of with them. And yes, we addressed that in the room. Let's talk about this continuation school. Let's tell the staff, listen, we know that your job is to take the weak, the kids that haven't survived, and push them forward. We know you have to teach a kid a year's worth of work in 9 weeks. And we also know that the reward for you getting a student to grade level proficiency is they leave you and go back to a comprehensive high school. We have to actually identify that that's something a lot of people don't see. It's something that a lot of people don't give you credit for. So I'm going to be clear here, right? We have to jump in. We have to see that the problem of the school may be trauma, and we address that trauma in the past, but we don't focus on it, because once I see that we've identified that and that we've moved through it, then we have to work on the problem of complacency. Then I jump right into high expectations, clear outcomes, and a model that's important. Incredibly important to model the behavior that I expect them to do in return. So I want to be clear here as we move forward. Step one was acknowledge that elephant, acknowledge any trauma. But we're not psychologists. We want to say we hear you, we see you. We can't go backwards. I know where you stand, and I'm going to help you to go from where you've been to where you want to be. And the second piece is that we have to be incredibly clear with what our objective for the day is going to be. How are we going to do this? How are we going to, by the end of the day, change our perspectives, learn things, and know that by the end of today, we're already making progress? And if we do not give adults clear learning targets, clear objectives for the day, then we're never going to be able to move them forward. And so moving forward with this particular school, I decided to start off with acknowledging the fact that I did believe and meant it. I believe that they had the hardest job in education. that the term alternative school does not in any way refer to students that attend there, but rather the philosophy and process by which we have to get kids to proficiency in 12 weeks. I acknowledge their struggle. I explained to them that we had to have clear norms for the day and that these norms are not something I just made up. They were developed through reflection after 4 years of working with other teams, and I found out that three things would get in the room. Three things would get in the way in the room. And we would never accomplish our goals if these things were not dealt with. And so I just have three norms when I work with schools, and I'm very clear up front. Number one, let's keep an inquiry mindset. Let's be scientists, look at data, not feel a certain way about it. Let's not be advocate mindset, where we try to find data that makes us feel good. That is complacency. We are inquiry. What does the data tell us? What are our next steps with that data? Number two, let's discourse. Let's learn through talking with each other on a deep level. Let's not talk about our weekend. Let's not talk about field trips. Let's talk about solutions. Let's talk about how we see this data and move forward. Because when you discourse with other adults or kids discourse with each other, we move that rigor and understanding to a deeper level. And finally, I'm not going to throw 150 slides at you today, but I also expect you to talk, walk, and act like leaders in this room. Don't tell me you can't do it. Don't tell me you depend on somebody else. What do you have control over, and what are you willing to do in order to move us forward? At the end of the day, slow and steady wins the race. And then I move in with our clear targets, our clear objectives, because we need to paint a picture of what we're doing today. You see, clear learning targets are what we need for kids. And we often forget that when we're dealing with staff, we're doing and dealing with employees. And if we don't give the same clear targets and a purpose for our journey, for the meeting, and we just leave, there's no way to guarantee that these folks know where we're headed. And so with that, knowing that we're moving forward, maybe we can take a little cue from Coco now.
Now, how do we tackle this? The first step is getting crystal clear on what we want students to know and be able to do. This is the heart of the PLC process, the first of four critical questions. And get this, it's about 75% of the work. But here's the catch, it's not the fun part. Many teams want to skip straight to assessments, but that's like trying to bake a cake without measuring the ingredients. We have to identify essential standards, the key skills and knowledge students must master. And not just list them, but really rate them on four things. Readiness, how well does this prepare students for the next level? Endurance, how useful is this skill in adult life? Assessments, how often does this show up on big tests? And leverage, does mastering this help in other subjects? Each gets a score from 1 to 5, adding up to a total out of 20. The higher the score, the more critical the standard. Why does this matter? Because John Hattie, a big name in education research, found that having clear learning targets has a huge impact on student success. He gave it a 1.29 effect size, which is massive. It's not enough to just write the target on the board. Teachers need to talk about it with students at the start, middle, and end of lessons. Students should know exactly what they're aiming for and be able to say, "This is what I need to learn today." Here's a quick story. I once visited a school where every team had a dozen essential standards. That's way too many. It's like trying to juggle too many balls, you end up dropping them all. Instead, teams need to focus on mastering one or two critical standards at a time. Slow and steady wins the race.
And there you have it. Slow and steady wins the race. And I think I want to paint a picture that you can do this in any kind of profession. It doesn't have to be education. But what we find is, in this particular instance, I wanted to give a concrete example. What I told these folks is, by the end of today, together, we are going to identify essential standards. I think I talked about this before on a previous podcast. What are the organs of what we teach? What are the five or four things, especially when you're teaching alternative ed? What are we going to guarantee that a kid's going to leave the room at the end of the year, the end of our 12 weeks, knowing? You see, that's the heartbeat of what we teach. And so, as Coco was explaining, we want to be crystal clear that if you can't come together today, if you can't talk to each other, and you can't figure out through data the most critical thing that you teach, then you don't even have a starting point to begin with. If you know anything about education and professional learning communities, question number one is, what do we want our students to know and be able to do? Coco mentioned, you know, John Hattie says that if the kid knows, if a student knows what the target and the objective is for learning, you can actually accelerate their learning up to 2 years in one school year because you're being crystal clear. And that student knows, did I get it or do I need help on it? And if we can't even determine what's most critical, we can't even serve those kids in that way. So what I like to do is, as Coco was sharing, is I tell them, make a list of what you think is most critical that you teach. And then we rate them on that real process, as they call it. Interesting. Because what real stands for, as she explained, is readiness. So let's just take an idea like, a student will be able to develop a claim, support that claim with evidence, and provide reasoning. We asked that team, on a scale of 1 to 5, if a student can develop a claim, support it with evidence, provide reasoning, on a scale of 1 to 5, how much is that going to help that student be successful the next year in English? And all of them are like, that's a 5. Of course it's necessary. Well, let's move on. Because see, the E stands for endurance. So on a scale of 1 to 5, if a student can develop a claim, support that claim with evidence, and provide reasoning, how much is that going to help them in life after school? And you think about it, that's what a job interview is. That's what sales is. That's a 5, baby. Kids need that skill. So we're not just teaching to a test, are we? But tests are important. So the A stands for assessments. During state exams, or maybe, I don't know, job assessments, how often will a student have to develop a claim, make a statement, and find some evidence to support it, and provide some reasoning? And the answer, again, on a scale of 1 to 5, was a 5. Because we know if there's one thing kids struggle with, it's finding credible evidence. And finally, we get to the L, the leverage. See, in a professional learning community, we're not just thinking about ourselves, we're thinking about the other folks in the room. And if a kid can develop a claim, support that claim with evidence, provide reasoning, on a scale of 1 to 5, how much would that help them in another class, like history? Like science, like math, and what you end up having is what we call a home run. It's a 5. And so now we've made some progress. We have turned the anger in the room into victory and purpose. And I think it was important for me to use a concrete example so it's not just theory. This is what we did that day. And you know, now when I go back to the school, you know what happens? They're happy to see me. When you're a coach and you are a leader, remember this. Number one, you are a target, a human target. If if you're trying to improve your product, your service, and your results, you will always be a target. Number two, realize that leadership is not about authority, it's about service. You need to provide support, you need to serve, and you need to find ways to motivate, to connect, and to hold accountable the folks that are in front of you. That was a good lesson to learn from today. And as we move forward, we can probably get some more insight from our buddy Coco.
And here's a leadership nugget. As administrators or coaches, we're not here to bark orders. Leadership means serving. If a team is struggling, jump in. Sit with them, help record their meetings, support them in sharing their progress. Small acts like these build momentum and show that leadership is about lifting others up, not just telling them what to do. Of course, not every student learns at the same pace, and that's okay. But if we can agree on what's essential, that's our starting line. Once teams identify and share their essential standards, we can celebrate progress and move from just checking boxes to truly engaging in meaningful work. Now, I won't sugarcoat it. Sometimes, coaches and leaders face resistance. People might cross their arms and shoot daggers your way when you bring new ideas, but don't take it personally. Stay connected to your why. For me, it's about legacy, making sure every student has access to a guaranteed, viable curriculum where excuses don't hold them back. So here's the plan moving forward. Teams will use this real process to rate their essential standards and prioritize them. They'll vote, resolve conflicts, and get clear on what matters most. This isn't about getting by, it's about doing the work that leads to real growth. Because here's the bottom line. If we can't get our teams to guarantee learning for every student, how can we expect them to do it in the classroom? Some things are worth fighting for, and this is one of them. Leaders lead by example, by supporting, and by showing up ready to help. So, what can you take away from this? First, embrace that change is hard but necessary. Second, clarity in learning targets is your secret weapon. Third, leadership is about service, not authority. And finally, focus on what's essential and do that well.
Wow. Good advice. Good advice from a good counterpart. And with that, we've hit the end of the road. I know this episode was a little longer, but it's because it's so complex and it needed to be unpacked. So I'm going to give you a couple of pointers and maybe challenge you folks. Don't be afraid to get in front of people. Don't be afraid to wear your heart on your sleeve. But if you're going to do it, acknowledge where the poison came from up the stream first. Deal with any trauma. Deal with any bad memories. Acknowledge it. Be empathetic about it, but also be firm that our past and our past experiences don't identify who we are. Next, make sure that you're clear on what the outcomes are going to be for the day. Stand behind those outcomes. Don't be trying to get people to get on board with the outcomes. Be clear on, we are going to get here and I'm going to help you get there. So people know when I leave the room today, I should be able to do these things. But they also know you're going to give them support. Finally, lead through service. Don't stand there with your arms crossed. I mean, we don't like it. We don't like it when the crowd's got the pitchforks and the effigies, and they don't like it when we stand there with the same look. Jump in. Do some work. Offer help with a smile, because then you're showing them that the passion that you have for this is just as big as theirs. Together, we can make it. And that's the message I leave you with. Get out there. Don't be afraid. Take one on the chin. And then show them that you're still standing afterwards. because it's that important. What we want to get to is to the point where all of us take one on the chin together, stand up, dust ourselves off, and get better. Thank you. This has been On the Road with Coach Eddie and Coco. And remember, the mission of this podcast is to bring you onto the front lines to see how we are truly transforming education across the nation.
As always, it's a wonderful thing to have the privilege to use your brain and learn something new. I'm your host, Coco, and I'll see you next time.
And I'm your host, Coach Eddie, and this has truly been a great journey. You have been on the road with Coach Eddie and Coco. Remember, now that you can see it, you can do it. Let's get to work together. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.